This is CliffCentral.com.
What if you were told you were going to live to 200 years old? Imagine living to 200 but not feeling over 100 years old. As Sanlam turns 100, they're looking ahead to the future. The 200-Year-Old is a future-facing podcast based on leading science and expert opinion, featuring the voices of Nambita Mpilwana and Tapela Mokoena. It's the story of Lesedi and Daba told in the year 2218, and it's a podcast that pulls back the curtain to the world of the future. Visit the 200yearold.co.za to listen, or find out more on cliffcentral.com.
Future CEOs on cliffcentral.com.
Hello, everybody. My name is Lubi Mboya Arnold. And once again, welcome to Future CEOs for this session of Startup of the Week. He's an entrepreneur, a social entrepreneur, a storyteller of note, a limitless thinker, an activist, top CEO under 40 in Africa, the CEO and co-founder, Shukri Tovey, Startup of the Week. Welcome to Future CEOs.
Thank you so much for having me. Really happy to be here.
So listen, I heard an Islamic saying, and I really thought that you would appreciate it. So it goes like this, and tell me your thoughts. Seek knowledge from the cradle to the grave. What do you think?
Absolutely. The first words of the Quran is actually read. Read in the name of your Lord. I think, and nowadays, I think, you know, this idea of continuous learning and things is even more prevalent. So absolutely, that's an amazing way to start the show.
Nice, yeah?
Very nice.
So, because it's me, I really like to do things differently. And there's like, I prepared for you and all that jazz, but I really just want to be real with you. So I really want to start with Unwritten, because really that is something that truly resonates with me as an actress, as a social entrepreneur, and as an athlete. And I'm an endurance athlete. So one of my biggest dreams and one of my biggest missions is to be the first black woman from South Africa to summit Everest in the Himalayas.
Yeah.
And the story being, I climbed Kilimanjaro for the United Nations on International Women's Day. We summited with seven Nepali women, it being United Nations. And they were telling me stories about Kathmandu in Nepal and the traditional wisdom which you speak about and which you showcase us in Unwritten is just so drawing to me, and something, I love religion and I love truths, seeking of truths. So I would like to start there. The Unwritten. Tell us about it and that journey.
So, first of all, you're going to do it. I'm with you 100% of the way. So, good luck with that journey.
You said it here.
I said it.
You
here
said
we go.
It here.
Right?
Okay.
We're going to speak this into
oh
reality.
Oh, my gosh.
Right?
We're going to chat nicely. I can feel it. Yes.
So, you know, Unwritten comes from a place of sort of, you know, we as CEOs, as business people, as professionals, we go from A to B to C as quickly as we can, and we need to figure out like why. And for me, it was a question of why, like how do I go somewhere that's different? I'm tired of sort of, you know, listening to the same authors and the same writers telling me how to live my life, how to save my money, what to do in
business
relationships,
business tools.
Yeah. And I was like, I just want to actually figure things out from a place of some old world wisdom. And Nepal, and I'm sure you would know, was sort of described to me as a museum without walls, where there was this lived heritage and everything. And I went, I'd never been there. I've traveled, you know, to many other countries around the world. And I went there, and it was a deeply personal and spiritual experience that in some way I managed to bring that across on camera. And as an actress, you'd know that you lose something when there's a camera in the room. And I think I'd be failing and I'd be dishonest if I said we didn't. So some of those discussions when you've just walked all the way up a mountain and you're speaking to a lama in a monastery,
oh my God,
the last thing you really want is a camera, right?
Absolutely.
And so the style of it was very much as not invasive as we possibly could have it. And just to really have time to try and unlock knowledge and wisdom from sources that people don't typically, you know, have access to. So it was a deeply humbling experience for me. I think it was a counterbalance to what it takes to be a CEO in the world today. Because, yeah, you need to be able to drive, you know, strategy and be able to get things done. But if you break down before anybody else does and you can't sort of internalize that, then what's the use of that, you know? And so 2 years on now, it's something that still lives with me every single day.
So this was a 2 year ago journey. What was the most deeply lesson learned that you took away from it and interpreted that into the business world?
I think, you know, the biggest thing was that in going there, I sort of critique myself in the film and I say I was a spiritual tourist. I went there in search of some sort of enlightenment or some sort of aha moment.
Yeah.
And what you find is that actually there's beauty in everything. There's beauty
that.
In the smallest things. There's beauty
that.
In, you know, eating something with somebody, you know.
The simple pleasures.
Just the simple pleasures. And so for me, it's about sort of understanding that even on an organizational level, is to respect people for who they are.
Absolutely.
And not have this very sort of top-down view of what's happening.
Speak to people on their level.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, condescending. I love that. And then, so it won the Van Gogh? Van Gogh?
Van Gogh? Van Gogh. We would say Van Gogh.
Yeah, man, hey, man, hey, man.
Yeah, unless can you claim a beetje Nederlands spreken, right?
Hey, man. You know, so what did that do for you as a filmmaker, because sometimes, you know, as filmmakers and as creators, sometimes those awards can be ego-driven, but I know that it was an arthouse film, so you didn't go into that looking for that kind of validation and acclaim, and yet you got so much from that really independent documentary, and that's my vibe. That's completely my vibe, yeah? Next time, the actress featured, thank you.
We gotta collaborate, right? We gotta collaborate.
I don't care.
I'm due for a new project, so let's talk, right?
You do. I'll just to be there, okay, with you.
I'm there. We're due for a new one. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it you're right. It wasn't for. And you're very right. We can very easily get into this egotistical sort of space around, oh, and our endorphins run because this is what, you know, we're getting all these sort of like kind of accolades from all over the world. For me, It was, it made me feel secure in the fact that actually my message could resonate with more
Absolutely.
People. And so for me, that was more than anything else that what was important. So having, you know, gone to award ceremonies from all the way from Bali to Hollywood and see that people connected with it and speak about conversations in the film, and that was amazing. You know, they could keep the trophies and stuff, mm-hmm. which is cool. Looks nice in the cabinet. But the fact that it connected with people all over the world, that's really the beauty in it more than anything
else. I know you're all about impact, and I love that about you. Did you just come back from Berlin in May? Okay, we're going to talk about that. But you see, my mind's all over the place. This is what I like. This is when I have an interesting guest because I'm like, let's go take it back to the very, very beginning. Cape Town, penniless students, District 6. I'm from Langa, so I know that vibe. I know what it's at. Humble beginnings. Take us back to the younger you, student you, life you.
So I come from a working class family that comes from District 6, which, like Sophia Town, was sort of pushed out during the Group Areas Act in the 1960s. And so my parents didn't finish high school. So I'm the first generation of my family to go to university, finish school and go to university. And then in the process of needing to do that, I need to pay back my student loans, which is just so prevalent in today's times when we speak about, you know, fees must fall and all of these things. And so my business partner, Amra, and I start a business. And to pay back our student loans, primarily. And we would take public transport. We would jump on the trains, and we say that our first pitches were rehearsed on the trains and crafted on the streets as we walked to our first pitches. And yeah, if I think back now...
How old were you then?
I was 22 at the time. Is, you know, we were ambitious novices, right? Which is a dangerous place to be. And I think having those roots, you know, having an old warehouse in Woodstock, you know, Cape Town a little bit, is with no internet, surrounded by, you know, kind of, you know, poor people, working class people all around you. When that's where you start, and those are your roots, you take it with you wherever you go. And so when I speak to some of the people in my team now, and I say, tell me about your journey to get to work. And they say, well, I wake up at 4 in the morning and I bath my nephew and then I leave the house at 4:30 and I get to work at 8:00 and I have a smile on my face. And so it makes you so much more of an empathetic leader when you come from a space like that. And so, you know, I've moved on and I have my own ideas of Cape Town now, actually, in terms of kind of things. I think some of the trauma of coming from Cape Town a little bit and
like
seeing that divide and sort of...
Listen to... Okay, finish, because I could definitely add with you. Yeah.
And so maybe you come from... You feel the same way.
I feel the same way.
I struggle to be there because...
Absolutely. You know what, Shukri? I love this conversation. It took me leaving Cape Town to understand how traditional, how orthodox and how racist it still is today.
Absolutely.
Today, because there it's like you're swept. And yes, I mean, we're in our 40s, so I know exactly what generation we're coming from. UCT, we're thinking everyone's the same because it's so, you know, you see everyone from so colors, but it's so not.
The first time I realized as a Capetonian
yeah.
that you can be black and drive a Mercedes Benz was when I came to Johannesburg. You know, I find that, you know, I tell my friends in Cape Town, I say, look around this restaurant. There are no black people. Besides the people taking our glasses away.
There are no black people.
That's not okay. You know, this is not, I feel uncomfortable. And so I very consciously choose to live in Joburg. And I'm a very proud Joburger, even though, as you rightfully say, that's where my roots come from. So I have this, it's an important message that I have to spread to people globally to understand that, that paradox and where I come from. But in South Africa, I, you know, to everyone from Cape Town listening to this, I encourage you to step out of that, to come to, you know, other parts of South Africa and actually experience things that when in a world that is more integrated, that is more like it should be in this country.
You know what? I just did a recent shoot for a specific a brand, which you won't say, and on set, Shakri, there are no black people. And I'm like, not even intern. Not even a standby what? Nothing, you know? And it breaks my heart that really, as being an international, you know, place, you know, in Africa, that is still happening. And hence coming to your hashtag create movement, which is the deconstruction and decolonization of the creative industries. But before we jump into that, what characteristics do you have now as a CEO and a co-founder of really a groundbreaking company called Fault, and it's so perfectly named, that comes from humble beginnings? What are the characteristics that have carried you through to be that kind of leader?
I think the key word for me is empathy. And I think that's both internally for the people around you, because in order to be successful, you have to attract the right people that believe in your vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then to have empathy for the stories that you tell. And I think that, you know, as an actress, again, that ability to have a sense of empathy is really the most important thing. And as I've grown as a leader, you know, I've realized the value in stepping back and letting people do what they do best and listening more and, you know, perhaps taking less control and realizing that that's more empowering than anything else. So, look, it's a journey for me every day. You know, we kind of, I think, leadership and being, in inverted commas, a CEO is something that we continually learning, and it's an on the learning job.
What's the hardest lesson you've learned so far in life?
I think the hard lesson as an entrepreneur is that the world is not set up to help you. So, you know, from...
It's so hard.
And again, I think people, so you know, in a world, there's a book called Banker to the Poor by Muhammad Yunus, where they...
Banker to the Poor, which I had a pen. Banker to the Poor.
And he, I'll remind you afterwards.
Remind me.
He speaks about when people get jobs, middle class, nice professional jobs, he says that they're like, they get soaked in warm water and all their edges come off and they become soft. And that's what you find is that people... They can't relate to people that are actually trying to be out there having their own hustle. So when it's like, hey, please give me a chance. Hey, can you give me a line of credit? Can you do this? Can you do that? It's just no, 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 no. And so what you have to work really hard on is not becoming too hard, because it's so easy to become bitter and hard because you're the only person in this world that's actually out there that's got your back. And so, you know, doing things like doing unwritten, spending time out in different places, kind of draws you back and softens you to what you need to be able to, you know, appreciate about this world.
And you've got to be that, you know what I mean? It's one thing just to say that we are softer and giving and generous and compassionate and empathetic, but also being that. Let's go to the article you wrote, After Sir Martin, A Time for Reflection. Can you just give it to us in a package, and then we'll just break down a couple of points, which I found interesting.
Yeah, look, in principle, and let me start off with
who is Sir Martin?
Yeah, so let me start off with a little bit of humility and say that Sir Martin Sorrell is a formidable businessman and entrepreneur and someone that is probably we can learn a lot from in terms of building an empire.
Yeah.
He was the CEO of WPP, which is one of the big four global advertising media groups in the world, and owns probably the lion's share of the advertising industry in South Africa and different parts of Africa and certainly the world.
Mm.
And so what I saw when he stepped down unceremoniously was that people were like mourning his loss. And as much as I am mindful of the fact that we need to learn from him, the fact that he brought certain structures in place and linear thinking to a non-linear industry and all of that, I said, hey guys, we actually need to take stock and realize that we our creative industry and advertising industry in this particular time instance is owned by foreign-owned hegemonic companies.
Absolutely.
And so let's not mourn this. Let's take this as an opportunity to take back our industries so that we can tell our own stories. You know, I think far too often it's the the internationally owned publishers that own our stories, even when we tell it. And it's our people.
Our archives are somewhere in the USA. Absolutely. Sarah Bartman getting her archives. Absolutely, yeah.
And so this idea of, like, you know, neocolonialism, and at university, you know, Kwame Nkrumah, Julius Nyerere were some of the great, you know, authors and things that I read.
What did you love about Julius Nyerere? Because, you know, I love him too.
You know, I think something that stood out to me, which I think that I still reflect on today, is that he says that development by an outside source is by its very nature lost to that outside source. And so it's about that self-determination that we need to have. And so, you know, we live in a multilateral world. We're not here to cut out, you know, foreign direct investment.
Absolutely.
But we need to create conditions in which local ownership and our people are owning the stories that we tell. And I think that people are not conscious of that. And I think that's really what the key thing is around that particular article.
And at the, and in creative spaces, that's now more pertinent and urgent more than ever. When we talk about sustainability of our stories and the viability of our stories, what can we say in reflection to what you wrote in that article?
Look, I think from an advertising perspective, we need to be more, and again, this is when people switch off, right? We need to be more authentic. We need to tell real cultural narratives.
Absolutely.
We can't have these, like, dancing tembis around a wash bucket in a township environment. Like, it's patronizing, it's ridiculous, you know, more than two decades later.
And that's the only viewpoint that we've seen as, absolutely.
That we've seen as. So we need to tell real cultural narratives. We need to
Of this time and culture.
Of this time and culture. We need to realize, you know, I think from an advertising perspective, and I often say this to people, is that advertising by its very nature can be a noble craft when you go out there and you actually help people sell their products and services. Because sales, the ability to sell something, is something that people need to be able to do. Whether it's your son or daughter selling lemonade on the side of the road, that ability to make a sale, there's an inherent dignity that, you know, that is felt from that. And so I think that as advertisers, we need to take much more of a responsibility around the stories that we tell. So who's owning the story? Who are we talking about? Who is the target market beyond the data? Who are we really talking about? Like, don't give me algorithms. Don't give me big data. But, like, let's strip that away. And what are the stories that we're trying to tell?
That comes to me, the words that come from you, what I'm feeling is integrity and accountability and respect and dignity. Okay, let's take it back to May, where you were invited to the G20 Global Solutions 2018 Summit in Berlin. Tell us about that. Was that exciting?
Awesome. Young people from all over the world. You know, did that in and of itself, being in Berlin in the middle of summer. Oh my gosh,
dude.
So cool. I mean, you know, when you talk about, like, liberal, like the home of liberalism, like Western liberalism, like Berlin is that, right? It doesn't matter if you straight... Sometimes straight, you know, like, it doesn't matter what you are, you're accepted, and that is what it is. So it was a really interesting space to kind of be in, just by virtue of the actual geographical location. And then I was surrounded by all these policymakers and all these people that were, you know, have done massive research and
papers,
written lots of books and all of these things. And so what you realize is that as a South African, and we place these self-limitations on ourselves, is you go there and you have something to say that people are interested in. You have solutions to some of these global problems. And so what happened was I became very quickly became sort of a spokesperson for people from Brazil, India, Indonesia, Russia.
How's that?
Because there's a commonality around the fact that we come from developing nations, if you like. And so when they speak about multilateralism and open
and you know
the
what?
Borders,
you know, the look you have, it's like a nice, you know, mixed vibe there going on there. We'll tweet a picture of how Shukri looks. Not too shabby, y'all. Not too shabby. Yes.
So this is the thing, right? And so they speak about this and we're like, can we cut the bullshit? when we talk about opening the book, they talk about the rise of populism and nationalism and all of these things, which we understand, right? And we say, yes, we need to open the borders, but not if it perpetuates existing colonial business patterns. And that's the same in South Africa. It's the same in Brazil. It's the same in India. And so I was asked to speak on the stage in front of 1,300 people from all over the world. So definitely the highlight in my speaking career. And share the stage with Professor Jeff Sachs, who wrote The End of Poverty, and he's the special advisor to this UN Secretary General.
That is incredible.
And talk
that
about,
is incredible.
And actually say to him, look, you know, we as South Africans, we've been dealing with inequality for a long time. And these are some of the things that are continue to exist within our world. So it was amazing. And for me to feel like a policymaker for a while and actually be there. And I get invited back again next year. So I'll be going back again.
But babe, I mean, we can't consider ourselves young global shapers anymore. I don't know. Like, we don't want to leave that young kind of, you know, definition. Ever,
no, next
ever.
Year I'm not young anymore. I scraped in this year. So next year I'm not young. Next year I'm just a policymaker. So, yeah.
Okay. This is the time I like to play quick fire. So I'm going to say a word or two and you just give me your automatic response to that. Ready?
Yeah.
Fourth Industrial Revolution.
I think connectedness. I think connecting people from all over the world.
Okay. Ooh, you're good. Okay. Diversity versus inclusion.
I think they're both. I think that if we search for diversity, you'll by its very nature be more inclusive, whether that's along racial or gender lines or anything of the nature.
Love it. Shared value.
So shared value, something that I'm really passionate about.
Me too.
Really, really passionate about.
Me too.
I think about having a broader list of stakeholders. So whether we're trying to achieve something as a business, what are our broader stakeholders in terms of our community, the people that work for us? We need to fundamentally shift the role that a business plays in society.
Equity, equity, equity. That's my vibe. Okay, okay. You're good.
Okay.
Profit meets purpose.
Again,
you like that.
I like that, right? So exactly that. Can we actually match, you know, kind of financial metrics with social metrics?
Gosh, you're good. Pride factor. That's just something. Yeah, let's think about it. We can create pride factor.
I'm actually gonna go with sort of the self limitations that we place on ourselves again. You know, as people that whether you're a business person and as an entrepreneur, I think that ability to have pride in yourself. That's what you need more than anything. And so as young people, we need to develop that pride in young kids because they become the next generation of entrepreneurs.
So I went to the director's event, which is the biggest boardroom in South Africa. Nice, nice, cool event. Oh, networking, you know. There I picked up the term that President Cyril got from our belated veteran singer Hugh Masekela, called Tuma Mina, which is just a reflective rhetoric on, let us lead the way as South Africans. Let us do it together. A rhetoric on teamwork and collaborations and that we all have a responsibility and duty to each other and to our youth and to our country. Would you like to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think, you know, without getting too political around it, I think as a leader, you need rhetoric, you need slogans, you need to lay down a value base. You can't do everything. You can only create a framework in which we have an energy and a feeling that we can go out there and do that on a micro level. And I think that without taking sides on a political basis,
yeah.
I think that's what we need. And if it means holding up some of the slogans and the sayings of our national heroes, then I find that amazing.
And you know what? And what I love about it, it's not party politics because we don't do that. You know what I mean? It's just a rhetoric that South Africans can fit into, which is awesome. Tell me something that people really don't know about you, your personality, your family. So you're a dad and you're a hubby. Lots of things going on in your life. How are the kids? How's wife? How's moving to Johannesburg?
Yeah.
Are they happy?
Yeah. As I said, I'm happy. I'm a proud Joburger now. I've been here for 6-7 years. So I'm a proud Joburger. I think what people realize is they define me by what I do at work. And I'm fine with that because I think my personal life is my personal life. But I am constantly in search of balance, you know, in all aspects. And I think we should all be. And so I think that's what people don't really realize. It's very easy to, and as in Afrikaans, we say, ho blink kan boer, and say, you know, this is what's happening. This is the party line. This is the company line. And But yeah, you know, the secret to having it all is knowing that you already do.
And that's a wrap. I'm joking. Never. That's power. Okay, we are wrapping it up. It goes quickly, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. I like the quick fire stuff.
Did you like that?
It fast tracks us through a lot of stuff, which is cool.
I'm cool, eh?
Yeah.
Am I good?
Yeah,
Am I good?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about Create Movement. Hashtag.
So, I mean, yeah, Create Movement for me is about, and it's something I spoke about at the G20 summit as well, and it's about sort of people not realizing on a global level the fact that there are these, you know, foreign-owned companies that own, like, the whole sort of ecosystems of economies in Africa particularly. And I think,
and we're not saying no to foreign investment.
No, we're not.
We can't.
But what we are saying is to people that are within those ecosystems is to fight for that. So let's fight for shared prosperity models. Let's fight for kind of, as you rightfully said, kind of, shared value. Let's fight for those kind of things, because I think all too often as Black people, we get into positions of power,
silos,
and we hold on
silos
for dear life. We're
absolutely
like, hey, I'm the Black person in the room, great. And that talks again to that self-limitation we have of ourselves. Like, you can be a world-class Black South African or Black African and lead and coach and develop and nurture underneath you and continue to fight change. And that's my message, you know. For me, this is not a Black-white conversations. This is some of the most empowering decisions that I've ever been made have been made by white people in South Africa for me, you know. And I want to say that categorically, is that we need to have a much broader view of what we need to do. And so that's really what Create Movement's all about.
As an entrepreneurial activist, and I love that term. I think I want to call myself that. That's a nice term. Tell us about the obviously the fort, but the talent hub side of it. So that's the skills and the training and all the good stuff.
Mm. So yeah, Fort, we are you know, an agency of thinkers, makers and creators, and we call ourselves Storytellers for a Connected World. That's my final pun, promise. But that was pretty smooth, right?
Yes,
you know?
Sure.
I have it on my cue card here.
Dude,
no.
Yeah.
But you know, I think what really kind of, you know, wakes me up in the morning is to develop young people. And not only young people, to develop people holistically. And so what I love to do, and this is what I tell people, is that I want you to be strong enough to go off and start your own business. So in our talent hub, we bring some of the best people into our organization, which is fine and fair. And hopefully we can fast track them as leaders. And if they move on to other organizations and become leaders, they're great. Awesome. That's what I want. That's our role. You know, I think that our educational institutions are sort of not in touch with what's needed. And so I think all businesses need to be educational businesses, you know. And so that's something that is super cool, and that we have, you know, an amazing team that run that. And so to young people, absolutely, you know, we have a youth board. You know, there's you know, which actually you can still apply for. And so you consult to me on a quarterly basis, because how can we possibly know what's best in the future if we're not speaking to our young people? So we have a youth board, we have an internship program.
That's a very smart idea.
Yeah,
That's a very smart idea. Talking about education, so you have a degree in law and business at UCT. You know what? I have plenty of conversations that our education system, whether it is from primary, grade R, early childhood development, all the way up to technical and tertiary education, that is not preparing our youth for the marketplace as it is today. At the director's event, which I was talking about, they were like, and these are hardcore professors in varsities as we speak, Stellenbosch, Wits, UCT, saying that, you know what, if you want to go to varsity in this day and age, it means that you are prepared to read encyclopedias. And that's kind of your knowledge intake. What is your spin or intake of education, and is it preparing our kids to be creators of our employment, or workers and being employers? Are they ready for the market?
So, no, right? So, I mean, I think people come out of our schooling system thoroughly uneducated. You know, they learn right and wrong answer subject. So you can come out with 7 A's and actually not know anything
Nothing.
About yourself or about the world.
Correct.
And so what I tell people from an education perspective is throw away coloring in books. Don't color in lines, because the lines don't exist. Don't teach people to color in, or kids to color in the lines. Give them a blank piece of paper and tell them to draw. And I tell people that allow your kids to play, because what I find is that people in the workplace who've been taught to be rigid and to do all of these things find it very hard to play. And what is play? Play is imagination. And what is imagination? Innovation. The only way you can actually move beyond what you currently have is to imagine it. And so we have to work on the creativity and imagination of our young people.
Tell us the positive points of your relationship and partnership and teamwork and collaboration with Amir Singh.
So the key part
of best part thing?
The best thing is that he doesn't want to be the CEO. That's the best thing about it. And he wants to make and create stuff. That's what he is. He's a maker. And so our roles have been just so clearly defined. People rally behind him as a maker. People rally behind me as a leader of a system. And we have managed to remain friends and build a business. And we are so blessed. You know, we were in London last week as well, on a business trip to be as mates. So you go to meetings and we can click on and off and have a strong, we kind of close a million-rand deal and then click off and be friends and talk about, you know, soccer and rugby, you know. And so it's been an amazing 12-year journey.
You're blessed.
Blessed.
Last two questions.
Cool.
Every day, your top priority being a CEO is ...
My top priority is the people in my organization. That I think if you look after the people, they look after the systems, that therefore look after the organization. The most finite and short definition of what a business should do is meet clients' needs. Right. However, I think that as a CEO, I need to be delivering to all my stakeholders. All, operative word being all my stakeholders. So that's what a CEO wakes up in the morning, not to deliver value to its shareholders, but to all its stakeholders.
Okay, I promise now, last two questions. Okay. I can't stop with you.
You can't count either, right? I don't know if you can't stop or you can't count, but either way, I'm enjoying this. Let's do it.
How do you switch off, shut down? Because I believe that true genius means shutting down, recovery, and rest at some point. How do you do that?
With great difficulty, first of
Come
all.
Come on.
But I think that, you know, coming home and being in an environment where you where you like have to wash the dishes and clean the table and just get stuck into things and kind of bath
home life,
kids and home life is what kind of, I think, to be able to traverse those two worlds is tough. Because you, again, like you said earlier, you operate in this ego world. I did this, we did that, boom, boom, and you come and actually nobody cares. They just want you to be there and be present.
Be dead.
So for me, I need a lot of alone time. I think, you know, people draw energy from me, and so I need to replenish that. And so whether that's just sitting by myself in a coffee shop, reading the newspaper, we need that alone time to like actually repair.
Last question, for real.
No, but then now we're counting. That's fine. You said two and we did one, so we're on one still, yeah.
If you had to talk to 21-year-old Shukri about your journey, what would you say to yourself at 21 years old?
I've thought about that enough. I think that I would tell him to enjoy every step of the way.
Yeah.
And to focus on going far and not fast, because that's really the goal, more than kind of getting there quickly. I think when you 20 years old, you wanna your idea of success is quite different to what it is, you know, 12 years later.
That's globally awarded, serving on numerous boards, representing Africa's new creative landscape, a social entrepreneur with a heart of gold, with continental focus and a global impactor. Shukri Tovey, social entrepreneur, storyteller, limitless thinker, a great fun to be with, top CEO under 40, CEO and co-founder of Fort. Thank you so much for being on my show.
Flubi, thank you. Honored to be here. And forwards and upwards to you as well.
So that's Flubi Moya Arnold and Shukri Tovey right here on Future CEOs, hashtag Startup of the Week. Bye.
This is CliffCentral.com.